there are two sets of numbers that I think are interesting. One is that the federal government, beginning in the 1970s after the Arab oil embargo, started doing some of the relatively easy things like putting in motion detectors to turn off the lights. But obviously, we've been doing a lot more to get green and to get green LEED ratings for our buildings. We had the Pacific Northwest National Labs do a study recently of our buildings that are green, and they found out that the of 22 buildings that are pretty exceptionally green buildings, they're 25% less on energy reduction than comparable private buildings. And what I love even more is that they found that they're among our most popular buildings with our tenants, because people seem to sense that there's better air quality, there's more daylight. And so that should lead to more productive buildings as well. It's pretty great numbers.
So give us an example of some of the buildings we might know about or might have been in.
You know, I don't know if you've been in them yet, but we've done some really green buildings. San Francisco, we built a new federal building, opened it in 2007. But some of the buildings, even in Washington, that have in recent years that we've renovated, have become pretty green. I mean, the Justice Department, we did a renovation. It's greener than it was before because we've been able to update the chillers and the air conditioning and all that.
So it's not a function of brand new, necessarily. Even the old, tried-and-true limestone federal structures can be greenified, huh?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting if you think about it. I mean, some of this is back to the future. Our own headquarters building, which we're renovating, if it was finished in 1917. They didn't have air conditioning. The windows had to open. They created narrow corridors so that when you open the windows on both sides of the corridor, you could get some kind of a cross ventilation through it. The windows are huge in all of the Federal Triangle buildings in our building, and that means there's a lot of daylight. You really don't need a lot of lighting in those buildings. You know, they had to build green back then. Architects knew that the sun kind of comes up in the east, goes down in the west. They thought about that when they designed the windows and which way the buildings faced. And we're relearning some of those lessons. And, of course, we're also putting in a lot of technology that makes you allows you to be a whole lot greener still.
Now, I've seen pictures of that building in San Francisco, and it won architecture awards. It's a kind of an odd-looking place.
It's a little odd
exterior looking. Shutters and so forth. In that project, what did the federal government learn from building a building that was really out there for the federal government?
It was even out there for the private sector in San Francisco. What I think is interesting about the building, above the fifth floor, there's no air conditioning. And when they first proposed, the architect, Tom Main, who's won the Pritzker Prize in Architecture, the award for architecture in the world, we were thinking, boy, how do you not air condition a building? Then we thought, gosh, what's the temperature in San Francisco? It's like a very narrow range. It's a pretty nice climate. They shouldn't be air conditioning buildings out there. So we discovered that with a narrow floor plate, again, windows that open, the building looks a little weird because there's a screen on it to screen you from the sun. And we learned we've got elevators that only stop every third floor, so you use less energy. People have there's a staircase that you can see. There's, by the way, another thing that they used to do in the old days, so people don't use the elevators as much. Okay, so here's what we learned. We learned that we could actually save energy, that a lot of those things work. And then, you know, to be honest, we learned some of the stuff we were hoping was going to work didn't work as much. We don't get people off the elevators as much as we'd really like to. But the building does save energy over a private sector and federal buildings in the same area.
So speaking of air conditioning, can you see the day when maybe in the summer federal workers can wear Panama shirts and maybe a little notch up that temperature a bit?
Well, you know, if you notice in the rest of Washington, for example, there are a lot of people who don't wear coats and ties in the summer anymore. We haven't quite gotten there in the federal government. The Japanese, by the way, this summer had a whole initiative for people to dress more casually because they had an energy shortage after the tsunami. And I think that's something that we could consider. But we're not, you know, I want people to know that we're not going to make the buildings uncomfortable. We want people to be able to come to work and get their work done.
Probably OPM would have something to say about that.
OPM
anyway.
Does have something to say about it. We've talked to them.
We're speaking with Bob Peck. He is the Commissioner of the Public Building Service at the General Services Administration. So tell us more about the Net Zero Challenge that you talked about this morning. What's going on there?
Well, you know, one of the things we're trying to – our administrator, Martha Johnson, who's here at GreenGov today also, challenged GSA to go to ZEF. Zero environmental footprint. And there are a lot of ways you can get there. And we are challenging ourselves, really, to see how many of our buildings we can get to net zero. Net zero means that a building really doesn't take any more energy out of the grid than it gives back. So on balance, it's zero. We're going to have our first net zero building, in fact. We're renovating a historic building in Grand Junction, Colorado. It's called the Wayne Aspinall Building. And we're doing everything you can imagine. We're very efficient heating and air conditioning, solar collectors on the roof, and it's going to be a net zero building. We have other facilities that are
so just to be net zero with solar collectors, it has to generate power that it doesn't, excess power to put back in the grid?
Yeah, there are two ways to get to net zero. This gets kind of technical. What you'd really love to do is have a building that just basically doesn't use any energy, if that's at all possible. But obviously most buildings do. And so what we try to do is generate more energy from the building than we take out. We're able to do that, by the way. We've looked at doing that at some of our land ports of entry on the border, where you can put up wind turbines and solar collectors and really generate a lot of energy and balance the little bit of energy that you have to use at those places.
And speaking of Colorado, that gets cold as much as hot, and we haven't talked about heating. What about passive heating techniques and piles of stone underground and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, this is an awful lot of this stuff rediscovered in the 1970s when we first, really as a country, started thinking about energy again. And there are passive walls that you can do. There are, one of the things that we're doing an awful lot more, and it's another sort of back to the future, is what people call radiant cooling and heating. It's running hot water through pipes and buildings. It's kind of like, kids like me who remember radiators, and we have some buildings that still have them. That's kind of what we're back to in a lot of places. It's more efficient in climates where you can use it than forced air.
So net zero, is there a specific challenge out now to try to see who the first building is that gets there?
You know, we know the first one we're going to have. It's this building in Grand Junction. But I have to say the energy department, they may have trumped us a little bit, of National Renewable Energy Lab in Golden, Colorado. And that's already achieved a net zero in a very large building. They did a great job. So there's a kind of an informal competition going on.
Now, early on in this whole effort, GSA was creating and releasing tools, software, that agencies could use to measure their whole energy footprint. What is the status of those, and are you satisfied that the tools are fairly accurate and that people are using them?
Well, you have to ask Kevin Campshire, our head of high performance green buildings across the government. He's doing the measurements. I don't know yet how much people are using them. We're testing them out, so I don't expect that they're perfect yet. And those are tools to measure not just the footprint of our buildings, but footprints that we use when we travel, because we create carbon that way. Greening the supply chain, which is something our colleagues at the Federal Acquisition Service are measuring a lot. So how much are the vendors that we use using greenhouse gas in their work? So there's an awful lot of work going on, but a lot of it is in the pilot stage on those measures.
So very quickly, a year from now, what would you like to see as a notch in this whole belt of greening?
Well, I have two visions. One is I hope that everybody in the private sector, because we have an obligation, I think, to spend taxpayer dollars so that we can help the private industry get greener. And then I would like to see that in our buildings that we have an energy reduction that makes people just stand up and take notice. And one other thing I just got to know, we need help from the people who work in our buildings too, because you can put all the solar arrays and everything you want. We need people to think about just simple things, turning off the lights. Don't use it. Not everybody needs to have a printer, you know, and there are things like that everybody who's listening to this could help us do.
But you don't have to bring a galvanized bucket to work yet.
You don't have to do that. We want you to be comfortable and have a good day at work.